Hello and welcome to Useful Idiots. I'm one of your hosts, Katie Halper.
I'm the second host, Aaron Matte. Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for being here. Our website is usefulidiotspodcast.com. Go there to support the show and get bonus content. And this is our last episode before the election.
Insanity.
Which is going to be a nail biter, it looks like. And people have all sorts of feelings about it. It's like every single day, both candidates and their surrogates are competing to see who can be more offensive to people who oppose genocide. That's, right, to me, what this is coming down to.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a flavor of both parties in today's episode.
Now, I don't know who's going to win. I really don't. I'm not just saying that. I have no idea. I could see it going either way. But I do have to say that if Trump were to lose, it would be amazing if the reason he lost was because Puerto Rican voters in Pennsylvania voted against him. And of course, that would be because of the incredibly offensive comedy brought to you by Tony Hinchcliffe at Trump's Madison Square Garden rally, where he referred to Puerto Rico as a floating island of garbage in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah, I'm not even sure what the joke was. It was just derogatory. And, you know, I saw some comedians defending whatever his name is, Tony Hinchcliffe, saying that comedy is comedy. But my point is, like, where's the comedy? It's not even funny. Like, how's that funny to call Puerto Rico a floating island of garbage? If you're going to claim comedy, there has to be some comedy involved. And I don't know, maybe there's some context to the clip that I missed, but I didn't see it. I just saw a really stupid comment that deserved mockery, and that certainly to me was pretty hateful.
Yeah. So that's all I have to say. You got any predictions, Aaron?
No, I don't. It's just so hard. It's like, you know, and this is the theme of today's episode. We're going to hear from two Palestinian voices who feel differently about what should happen. I mean, nobody supports Trump, but they, you know, some people feel as if Democrats have to be punished for being the party in power facilitating a genocide. And others fear that Trump will be even worse. Every day, it's just a competition back and forth from both parties and their surrogates to see who can be more offensive in their support for genocide. Like, one day it's Rudy Giuliani saying some bigoted stuff at Madison Square Garden. Next day, it's Bill Clinton saying something repellent in Michigan. And in fact, that's the theme of today's four basic food groups. We're going to hear from both of these gentlemen. So let's kick it off with Democrats Suck.
Okay, so for Democrats Suck, let's take a look at what Bill Clinton had to say at a rally ostensibly for Kamala Harris in Michigan. I don't understand how he thought that this would be helpful to her, but you guys can be the judge.
I understand why young Palestinian and Arab Americans in Michigan think too many people have died. I get that. But if you lived in one of those kibbutzim.
No, he didn't say kibbutzes. He said, was trying to say kibbutzim, by the way, in case you missed that. Okay.
Kibbutzes.
In Israel, right next to Gaza, where the people there were the most pro friendship with Palestine, most pro two-state solution of any of the Israeli communities, were the ones right next to Gaza. And Hamas butchered them. And so then the people who criticize it are essentially saying, yeah, but look how many people you've killed in Ritalin. So how many is enough for you to kill to punish them for the terrible things they did? That all sounds nice until you realize, what would you do if it was your family and you hadn't done anything but support a homeland for the Palestinians and one day they come for you?
Okay, so this is just insane. He's saying that because some Palestinian militants came, broke out of their concentration camp, because Gaza is occupied by Israel, which he's omitting, that gives Israel the right to slaughter tens of thousands of Palestinians, because some of the Israeli victims on October 7th lived in areas that were pro-peace.
Right.
I mean, it's just completely deranged. There's no like revenge exception in international law. Like, you don't get to slaughter a bunch of civilians because some of your own civilians were killed by an occupied population and some of your own people happen to support peace. And by the way, he's omitting that there were Israeli soldiers who were killed on October 7th. And also he's omitting the fact we don't know how many people Israel killed on October 7th because that's been covered up. But we do know they killed at least some of their own people by employing the Hannibal director. But anyway, all that's just like – all that's details. The principle here is – like what is he talking about?
Yeah, and it also just shows like the imagine if we're your family. I mean, he has no empathy for Palestinian families. Why doesn't he imagine it was his family who's been wiped out? Like, he just has humanity for, he sees the humanity of Israelis, but not Palestinians.
Yeah, and if you're going to make that argument, if you're going to make the argument you have the right to use violence against civilians because something that happens to your family, then honestly, the only people who can make that argument are Palestinians. Yeah. Because they've been occupied and ethnically cleansed for decades. I'm actually not making that argument. I don't think anybody has the right to commit violence against civilians, no matter what happens to their own civilians. I don't believe, you know, that's terrorism. I don't believe in it. But if anybody has an argument to make, it's Palestinians, because they're the ones who are militarily occupied. And what gets obscured in all this is that, you know, I don't think Hamas set out to kill civilians on October 7th. Some of their people did, and some Palestinian militants did. But the operation was clearly an attempt to attack the Israeli military and to take captive Israeli soldiers so they could exchange them for Palestinians that are being held hostage inside Israeli prisons. Right. So, but anyway, all that's obscured in the details. But so what is Bill Clinton saying here? He thinks he's going to go to Michigan, where you have tens of thousands of people who are upset about genocide. And he's saying, get over it, because some pro-peace Israelis were killed on October 7th. It's so offensive. And then, in fact, it gets even more offensive.
It gets even worse,
Slaughter the people in your village. You would say, well, you'll have to forgive me. I'm not keeping score that way. It isn't how many we've had to kill. Because Hamas makes sure that they're shielded by civilians. Mm-hmm. They'll force you to kill civilians if you want to defend yourself.
Poor Israel. I mean, it is a victim of Hamas's human shielding. And but for this human shielding, which, by the way, according to Amnesty International, they documented lots of examples of Israel using human shields, and they did not document cases of Hamas using human shields. But I love the argument that, let's say for argument's sake, that they did do that, okay, just for argument's sake. I love the idea that but for that, Israel would be really careful with civilians.
Yeah, and what's also obscured here is that the people of Gaza have nowhere to go. They're trapped in a death camp, right? So it's like, by definition, they're going to be near Hamas because nobody can leave. They're like they're in a very small strip of land, more than 2 million people. And it's actually even more confined because Israel's ordered people to flee their homes. So they're even more concentrated than they were before October 7th. So it's Israel that forces humans to be victims because they won't let them leave.
Right.
It's worse than using people as a human shield. It's keeping people in inside a death camp on purpose.
Right. And Bill Clinton, pretending that they're human, being used as human shields.
Yeah, it's just so unbelievably cynical. But look, it gets even worse. And we have to hear more of this because this is who the Democrats are. Bill Clinton goes on to make essentially a messianic biblical argument that there were some Jews in Palestine 2,000 years ago. So therefore, sorry, Palestinians, you have to get mass murdered.
Hamas did not care about a homeland for the Palestinians. They wanted to kill Israelis and make Israel uninhabitable. Well, I got news for them. They were there first. Before there was their faith existed, they were there. In the time of King David, in the southernmost tribes had Judea and Samaria.
So now he's just making a straight up like Jewish Christian fundamentalist argument that because according to the Bible, there were some Jewish tribes in Judea and Samaria, which is the West Bank, that therefore now 2,000 years later, European Jews have the right to come over and steal all Palestinian land, commit ethnic cleansing, and now commit mass murder to maintain their stronghold over the land they stole. I mean, yes, there were Jews in Palestine 2,000 years ago. There also were Christians and Muslims. Does that give anyone the right to then say that they have the divine right to all the land and commit mass murder and ethnic cleansing? Bill Clinton is saying yes. That's what he's saying. This is like straight up religious fundamentalism. And he's a top surrogate right now for Kamala Harris in a state that they need to win, and where there's a lot of Muslim and Arab American voters. Like, are they trying to lose? That's the question you have to ask yourself.
Yeah.
Are you trying to lose?
I think maybe the Clintons are really upset that Hillary Clinton didn't get to be the first female president, and they don't want Kamala to get to be it either.
That's quite plausible. Honestly, how else do you explain this behavior?
Like, yeah, I mean, besides the fact that it's a disgusting worldview, like, isn't Bill Clinton smart enough to read the room? Like, it's a disgusting argument, but doesn't he know that it won't be convincing to people who care about Palestinians?
I mean, yeah, listen, there are many theories that could explain this behavior. I think yours is quite plausible, that the Clintons are just trying to, like, go scorched earth and not allow Kamala to be the first female president. Another theory is that, like, the Israelis have so much compromise on Bill Clinton, you know, and the guy does have a long track record of, you know, compromise worthy behavior, that maybe this is why he's doing it. I don't know. But it's like, or they're just so fanatically devoted to Israel and Israeli occupation that they're just willing to go into, you know, a swing state with a lot of Arab Americans, a lot of people who oppose genocide and offend them. Who knows? But whatever it is, it's not helping their chances. There's another personal aspect for this when it comes to Bill Clinton, which is that he's been on a, you know, 24-year PR campaign of lying about Palestinians and blaming them for the collapse of the so-called peace process. He claimed falsely that Arafat rejected a really generous peace deal that he helped put together, which is not true. Israeli officials have even said, Shlomo Ben-Ami, the former foreign minister of Israel, said that if I were Palestinian, I would have rejected the offer that Israel put forward with Clinton's backing at Camp David. He literally said that because he knew that the offer, the so-called generous offer that Clinton oversaw from Israel to Palestinians, denied Palestinians their most basic rights. It kept the major West Bank settlement blocks. It wouldn't meaningfully address the refugee issue. It wanted to take more Palestinian land in the West Bank than it was willing to offer Israeli land in return as compensation. Completely unfair. And Bill Clinton's been lying for 24 years saying that Palestinians walked away from this really generous deal.
Right.
So he's been involved in a propaganda campaign to justify Israeli violence against Palestinians. And that's what he's continuing here. And by making these ridiculous biblical claims that nobody except for a religious fanatic takes seriously. So that's Bill Clinton as well. There's a personal thing here. And it's so vile what he's doing. And I think he's playing with fire. They need Michigan to win. And every time he opens up his mouth here, he's just turning off more people who oppose genocide.
You can't make this up, honestly.
Well, speaking of which, let's turn to Republicans, because you also can't make up the vile bigotry that came out of some of Trump's surrogates, like Rudy Giuliani, who spoke at Trump's infamous rally at Madison Square Garden. And just to make sure that it's not just Democrats spewing vile bigotry about Palestinians, here's Rudy Giuliani.
September 11 was our darkest hour. October 7 was Israel's darkest hour. They are our best friend. I worked for Ronald Reagan for 8 years. Ronald Reagan said, we have to be there for Israel always because they are always there for us.
All right, a few things here. You know, in such a big, diverse country, is it really accurate to declare on everyone's behalf that we have one best friend? You know, I mean, look at everyone's like own individual lives. Like, we all know people with multiple different best friends, and, you know, a lot of factors go into having a best friend. Can really Joanna really say that on behalf of all Americans that Israel is our best friend?
And it's not on my behalf.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are many people who would disagree with that, that that's our best friend. Yep. It's very personal. It's a very personal choice, Rudy. Yeah. I don't think he should speak on behalf of everyone. And then he says that Israel is always there for us. Again, strongly disagree with that. Israel's certainly not there for anybody who lives in the U.S. with a relative inside Palestine, where Israel has slaughtered them, committing mass murder in Gaza, stealing their land. Israel's not been there for them. And even as on a national level, Israel has done things like getting caught stealing secrets. There was Jonathan Pollard, an Israeli spy who was like caught stealing secrets from the U.S. You know, he's Netanyahu.
He's more like a frenemy.
Israel's more like a frenemy. Israel's more like a frenemy.
Yeah, Pollard and for frenemy. I would say that. Yeah, that's like frenemy behavior when you spy on someone,
Sure. Definitely not best friend behavior. And then, you know, Netanyahu came to the U.S. back when Obama was trying to negotiate the Iran deal and tried to undermine him, tried to basically stab him in the back. So again, Israel's not always there for us speaking nationally. And I don't think Rudy Giuliani has the right to declare who is and is not our best friend. It just doesn't seem to be his place.
This is interesting, Aaron. I feel like you're almost more personally upset by this liberty that he's taken than by his political stance. Like, well, have you in the past have you felt like you've been forced into accepting best friends?
Well, I've certainly been forced into accepting, you know, like, you know, friends of friends or partners of friends, right, who, you know, I wasn't very big on. But yes, yeah, so maybe I am speaking from that lived experience. But yeah, I just need like the entitlement, like, right, you know, like if I went up to Rudy and said, like, no, our best friend is Rwanda, like,
right,
like, why does he get to declare one country being our best friend versus another? You know, anyway, certainly a country that commits mass murder and apartheid, I think most people can agree, is not worthy of being a best friend.
Right. But it's also interesting, of course, that he brings up Reagan, because unlike Biden, Reagan actually used his power to stop Israel from engaging in war crimes. And, you know, in 1982, he called up Menachem Begin on the phone, told him to stop bombing Lebanon, and even called what he was doing a Holocaust.
And that's what friends are for.
Now, that's some tough love. That's some constructive criticism. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, back to Rudy.
Hamas is not there for us. Iran is not there for us. They want to kill us. And the Palestinians are taught to kill us at 2 years old. They won't let a Palestinian in Jordan. They won't let a Palestinian in Egypt. And Harris wants to bring them to you.
Okay, everything you said there is just deranged, okay? First of all, Palestinians are not taught to hate anybody at 2 years old, okay? They're 2 years old. What does he think? Like there's some class where two-year-olds are brought in to, okay, everyone, now it's all time to hate America and Israel.
Right.
Like they're two. What is he talking about? Israeli society, and you can talk to any Israeli who's gone through this brainwashing system, they're actually indoctrinated to hate Palestinians because they're occupying them. And when you're occupying someone, stealing their land, committing mass murder, you have to dehumanize them in order to justify to yourself the horrors that you're inflicting. Palestinians are simply taught the truth that they're being occupied by this apartheid state. Not at 2 years old, by the way. It's just, you know, it's just insane. And then he says that Kamala Harris wants to bring Palestinians into the U.S. No, actually, the Biden administration tried to lobby Egypt to accept, you know, hundreds of thousands of new Palestinian refugees to help Israel commit ethnic cleansing. Egypt said no. So he wants to fault Egypt for not accepting ethnic cleansing. And by the way, when it comes to Jordan, the majority of Jordan is Palestinian. So he can't even say that Jordan doesn't want Palestinians. But like, regardless, are we supposed to be upset that Jordan and Egypt won't accept ethnic cleansing? Like, to him, ethnic cleansing is a good thing if the victims are Palestinian.
Right. You know, another group I have to say that Israel, I don't think, is there for, going back to your earlier point, Aaron, is the Jews. I don't think Israel's there for the Jews. I think that Israel makes Jews less safe, both in Israel and abroad.
I think that's accurate. And I think that's done on purpose, because to justify, an ethno state, you have to fearmonger constantly and leave people on edge and leave people feeling as if their safety is threatened. So therefore, why not do your part in making it unsafe for Jews everywhere, which is what Israel does.
Right. You know who else they're not there for, by the way? The hostages, who they've killed more of than freed, because they refused to negotiate with Hamas.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And by the way, you know, just correcting Rudy again, Hamas and Iran, they don't target Americans. Hamas targets the entity that's occupying it. Now, whatever you think about Hamas, they're a resistance organization. An occupied people have the right to resist.
Yeah.
Whether that serves their cause ultimately, whether that's prudent for them, that's for Palestinians to decide. But for him to claim that Hamas is some threat to the U.S., Hamas has never attacked U.S. interests. It never has. It resists its military occupier. A concept that people like Rudy Giuliani just cannot grasp, because they internalize, is Israel's right to occupy people and steal their land. That's, you know, where he's coming from. That's why he's filled with hate, because to justify such a horrible thing, you have to hate the victims of the policies you support. Okay, a little bit more Rudy here, and then we can move on.
They may have good people. I'm sorry, I don't take a risk with people that are taught to kill Americans at two. I'm on the side of Israel.
Okay, so again, in his mythical universe, Palestinians are taught at 2 years old to kill Americans, so therefore it's okay to support their mass murder and to fearmonger that they're all coming here when really they just want to live in peace in their own land.
What's this weird obsession he has with two?
Well, maybe that's where his mental state is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's in the mental state. But actually, it's not. That's like being too mean to two-year-olds.
You're true. Yeah, right.
Maybe that's
when he starts his hate curriculum for his kids as a father.
Yeah, well, I don't even want to think about this guy as a father. Okay, so that's Republicans suck. And that is where both parties are at. Their own brand of hatred, bigotry toward Palestinians.
Well, isn't that weird? We have a story that, once again, we love to find these stories at this very reputable outlet. It's from the New York Post. And it says, the headline, of course, man put on probation for sneaking into neighbors' homes to smell their shoes. Now, what's interesting about that is that usually the Post has very witty, pun-based headlines. But I guess this one is just such a shocking news story that they couldn't think of anything clever to say about it. But let's take a look. He wanted to put himself in their shoes, literally. Okay, well, they did have something clever to say in the body of the article, just not in the headline. A man in Greece was given a suspended 1 month prison sentence for sneaking into his neighbor's home at night and smelling their shoes. I don't even know if they realized there was a pun with sneaking, maybe sneakers. The 28-year-old sniffer, who told the Thessaloniki court he couldn't explain his foot fetish, was in essence put on probation and ordered to seek therapy. He did say it wasn't his intention to harm anyone. A neighbor who had left his family's shoes outside his house so they could air out found the man sniffing them. It kind of strikes me as a victimless crime. You know, like, it's not like shoes aren't part of your body. I wouldn't really mind if someone needed to do that.
You would offer up your shoes for someone to smell if they wanted to?
I mean, if I didn't have to, I mean, I guess I wouldn't want to see it. But if I did see it, I feel like I wouldn't call for their arrest. I would just ask them to maybe do it when I wasn't around.
Yeah, fair enough. Listen, I think you're right here. I think sometimes some violations of privacy, because it is a violation of privacy, but really, where's the victim?
Right.
The shoe is being violated. I mean, the shoe didn't consent to being smelled, but the shoe is also an object. So right. I think you can give this one a pass. So fair enough. Always interesting to hear about what people are doing with their time. In this shoe sniffer's defense, nobody is getting hurt.
Right.
No one's home is being broken into. So, you know, I don't want to give my endorsement, my full-throated endorsement of such activity, but I also don't want to shame anybody. So I just think that's a really interesting story, and certainly weird.
Yeah, certainly weird. Yeah, but not the sniffing part, just the story is weird. Yeah,
for isn't that terrible? Let's turn to a moment that went viral on CNN this week. The pundit Mehdi Hassan was appearing alongside a panel that included Ryan Gurdusky, who I don't know who that is, but Ryan Gurdusky,
conservative journalist,
okay, made himself pretty well known by basically uttering a threat in the form of a quip to Mehdi Hassan.
If you don't want to be called Nazis, stop doing
it. You're called an anti-Semite. You've been called an anti-Semite more than anyone else's table.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people by sit you. There and... No, by me. I never called you an anti-Semite. Okay. I mean, I'm not sitting here saying...
I'm a supporter of the Palestinians. I'm used to it.
It's fine. I hope your beeper doesn't go off. The thing is that...
Did you just say I should die?
You should not.
No.
Did you just say I should be killed?
No, I did not say that.
Hold on. Did you just say I should be killed?
Hold on.
On live TV.
I said I hope you're...
Guys, let me just stop.
You said you hope my beeper doesn't go off.
Because you said I'm a big supporter
of the Palestinians.
Hamas?
Guys, let me stop.
I said Palestinian.
Are you?
Am I what? No, of course I'm not.
Palestinians are not.
Then I apologize.
Are you a racist, violent person inciting violence against...
All right. So, you know, then he tries to defend his remark, and then he realizes, I think, that he's sinking deeper into quicksand. So then he says, then I apologize because you're not a supporter of Hamas, and therefore it's okay. It's not okay for me to taunt you about your possible death in a beeper explosion.
Right.
And he's since been banned by CNN. There's been a lot of outrage about it. But this is not the first person to make a public joke about a beeper explosion. And, you know, for those who don't remember, recently Israel set off a bunch of beepers inside Lebanon that were, you know, ordered by the group Hezbollah, and ended up maiming and killing civilians, including paramedics. And this guy on CNN is not the first person to joke about that. In fact, the first person to publicly joke about it was the U.S. State Department envoy to combat anti-Semitism, Deborah Lipsett. This is what she said in a public appearance shortly after the beeper attack in Lebanon.
After October 7th, there was a feeling around the world that Israel is weaker. And in the
You want a beeper?
We
ha 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 ha. So that's Deborah Lipsett making a joke. And, you know, her beeper joke did not get anywhere near the condemnation that the CNN pundit did. Maybe that's because, you know, the CNN guy said it directly to someone else, to a supporter of Palestinians, Marion Son. But also, you know, maybe because the media doesn't want to actually hold a Biden administration official to account. It's much easier to, you know, go after some conservative journalist who nobody cares about. Anyway, it was quite the moment. Quite amazing that someone would feel entitled to joke about that. Abby Phillip, who is the CNN host who was hosting that panel, she apologized on behalf of CNN and said that Ryan, whatever his name is, Ryan Gruderski, is now banned from CNN. So she apologized. But what's interesting is she's not apologized for something that she did that I think is even more vile than what her guest did. She promoted the lie from Israel that dozens of Israeli babies were beheaded by Palestinians on October 7th. She never apologized for it. Here she is back in October. Babies with their heads cut off. This is unbearable, but don't look away. Okay. So she promoted a piece of atrocity propaganda from Israel, a pure lie that was used to manufacture support for genocide in Gaza, has never deleted that tweet or apologized for it. So there's a lot more accountability that CNN needs to conduct than just apologizing for a really dumb joke by one of its guests.
And yeah, that's an easy, I mean, it was offensive what Ryan said, but it was kind of offensive on its face. What Philip said is very problematic because it doesn't seem offensive. It seems like the truth, but it's not the truth. And in fact, we know that things like that are used so that people accept the violence perpetrated against Palestinians. It's very dangerous.
And those have been your four basic food groups.
As you know far too well from listening to Useful Idiots, the 2024 election is coming fast. And while we can't predict for sure which candidate will win, we do know that either way, everyone else in the world will lose. Unless there was a fun and easy way to make a little extra cash on the whole terrible contest. That's right, betting's not just for sports fans anymore. Now it's the political junkies' time to shine. We figure that if we spend all our time on Twitter anyway, following the election and endless political analysis, why not put our knowledge to the test? It's MyBookie, a new sports book that lets you bet on the 2024 election from the general election down to who will win each state. If the world is crashing anyway, why not cash in? Don't miss out on this. Pick a side, use promo code USEFUL to double your first deposit and instantly start with a leg up, only with MyBookie.
Since this is a podcast, you can only hear me right now, but if you could see me, you'd be saying, whoa, who is that? It's me, Katie Helper. I'm just wearing the new fashion line from American Giant. Since 2011, they've been making high-quality, long-lasting, timeless American clothes, including their classic full zip, which was named the greatest hoodie ever made by Slate Magazine. Right now, I'm wearing the very stylish moto dress, perfect for feeling sporty and sleek, made with their soft and stretchy French terry fabric, and Aaron got the roughneck chore jacket, so he's looking good throughout his endlessly busy schedule. From activewear to work fits to the latest fashion picks, American Giant has it all. When most apparel companies have shipped too much overseas, making cheap disposable clothes and creating complicated global supply chains, American Giant stands for simple, local, high-quality goods. It's the kind of difference you'll feel and appreciate for years to come. When you buy American Giant, you create local jobs in towns that help stitch communities together. Get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com when you use the code USEFUL at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code USEFUL. So for today's show, we have a very special combination interview. We speak to two Palestinian Americans. We speak to Lexi Alexander and we speak to Rania Batres, and they have different takes on who to vote for in 2024.
And this has obviously been a very divisive issue among the Palestinian Solidarity Movement. You have people on the one hand who believe that the Democrats need to be punished for the fact that their administration, the Biden-Harris administration, has supported Israel's more than year-long genocide. And then you have voices who say, yes, the Democrats have supported the genocide, but Trump will be even worse. And the people who will be really punished if we don't elect Kamala Harris are not just the Democrats, but also Palestinians who could suffer even worse under Trump than they have under Joe Biden. That's the argument. So today,
and you also have people saying that Trump could be better for very cynical reasons than Harris on this issue.
Yes, even though he's surrounded by, you know, pro-Israel zealots and did not preside over a genocide, but did do a lot to bring us to where we are today, including the Abraham Accords, which tried to sideline Palestinian rights and which, you know, might have contributed to Hamas's decision to launch October 7th. So it's a tough issue. It's a very emotional issue. We're not taking sides in the issue. We're just here to present different perspectives. And up first, we have Lexi Alexander, who is a Palestinian American, a filmmaker, has been very outspoken, vocal in saying that Democrats should be punished, even if that means letting Trump win the election. And so here is our interview with Lexi Alexander.
Thank you so much, Lexi, for joining us.
Of course.
So you've been very outspoken about the issue of the upcoming election and, of course, about the Democrats' treatment of Palestinians, Biden's policies, Kamala Harris's statements. What is your overall view of 2024 and what should be done?
Well, you know, number one is that I don't think anybody in any situation ever should vote for genocide, not just for Palestinians, but for themselves. Like, I feel myself often like I'm talking to first graders. I mean, I grew up in Germany where Holocaust education is very big. Not sure if it done anything, you know, based on how the Germans are acting, but you do have mandatory trips to the death camps and you are basically brought up year after year again to really kind of internalize never again. And so I find myself constantly shocked. But I think to watch Americans eagerly, not just quietly, but eagerly what I consider to be a vote for Adolf Hitler in 1942. If there had been social media and everybody could have watched it every day, I never really believed the German lie that they didn't know. But there was also no social media. We have all been watching, you know, this genocide. And some people say, well, not everybody's on Twitter, not everybody's on Instagram. You know, I get different news channels. I get the BBC. I get, French news. You know, I like to see what comes up in this collection of feed every day of what they're presenting to me. And you cannot actually escape the fact that there's a genocide going on. This is not a secret. It's not a secret that it's a massive David against Goliath kind of situation, right? So I think even people that I know that tune out for mental health reasons can't escape it. So everybody knows. And the fact that everybody knows and is ready to go vote for the people who are doing it is, to me, shocking, to be honest. And I really, you know, question the level of education in this country, if it's, you know, if people can really be so ignorant and believe that, you know, oh, well, this is in, on the other side of the world, and obviously America can't control everything. Like, I think you would have to be incredibly ignorant to believe that, and I also don't think that's the case. So I find myself constantly shocked. And the fact that, you know, talking about this Clinton speech yesterday, the fact that Democrats are so masked off about it is, you know, it's mysterious. Like, you know, there's a lot of talk about it, but even in Palestinian chat rooms, we ask ourselves, what is actually going on? You know, either this election will come out, you know, like a landslide for the Democrats, and we were really wrong about everything, like, you know, about how people feel about Arabs, about Palestinians, about genocide, which I have to say, many dark days would be ahead if that's the case, you know, or they will lose, in which case I'm not sure what the strategy was here.
And what do you have to say to people who, obviously you've heard this, make the lesser evil argument? They say, yes, there's a genocide happening now. I'm not talking about people who are in denial about the genocide. I'm talking about people who say, yeah, there's a genocide happening now. Harris is, it's shameful what she said. Biden has enabled genocide, but they argue Trump will be worse.
You know, I think until 3-4 months ago, that was, you know, I thought it was always wrong to say that, because again, it's also about, can you actually give your vote to somebody committing genocide? The truth is, let's say Trump is worse for all of us. The truth is, we should make that sacrifice and go and do a worse, because the act of voting for somebody who is committing genocide will bring about so much worse. And I'm not talking just about us. I'm talking about the next generation and the generation after that. We are, again, I'm trying to explain to people, this is like voting for Adolf Hitler in 1942. I think it's a much bigger question. It's less about... And it's very hard as a Palestinian to argue this point, because people think I'm trying to save my people, which is true, I am. But even if I wasn't Palestinian, I would argue about the fact that we should all know by now that you cannot vote for Adolf Hitler in 1942. You just can't. What are you doing for yourself even? You know, we just had this pandemic and people complained how the government was careless about sending people out too quickly once they started to see the economy down. So it doesn't always hit brown and black people. It can hit white people, you know, and you just basically, what you're doing is you're enabling a monster. That's what you're saying. You're saying that we have watched you for 1 year supply the bombs to kill hundreds and thousands of people, and lie and veto ceasefire 4 times and supply more bombs and have no empathy for, you know, Palestinians. And we have watched our government, many have resigned. We rarely talk about that. There's at least 24 people that have resigned, you know, that we know about. We ignore that. So we are now all going to the voting booths and rewarding this behavior, this grows a monster. I mean, it's the thing I'm in shock about is, how is that not obvious? How is that not obvious that we can't do that? And again, that is assuming that Trump is worse. We should all say, well, shit, now we have to deal with a three-headed devil, because we cannot reward genocide. Because with that action, that will not only empower the Democrats, it will empower the Republicans as well. It will change the world completely. I mean, I am mortified that the Democrats win. I'm not even thinking about Trump and what happens if they win. I'm certainly not thinking about Muslim bans. I don't know if people don't realize every Muslim would love to leave this country. It doesn't even matter if they don't know where they're going, just for the killing to stop. Like, literally, we would all pack our bags. Everybody would leave and say, okay, if the deal is that we get deported to the moon and the killing stops, we go. That's how everybody feels. We just want it to stop. So this is not something you can threaten Arabs and Muslims with. But, you know, even the slightly more sophisticated, well, this is the only one we can push left or anything of that, is just ludicrous to me. And it doesn't strike me as an argument that adult people with a basic education should make. So it's I really sometimes wonder if Americans don't hear themselves.
I guess the problem is, you know, just to try to put forward the counter argument, not that it's something I believe in, because I think it's a really tough issue. And I can't tell someone, you know, that they should not punish genocide. I mean, it's just everything you're saying makes sense to me. But I want to put forward the counter argument in fairness, which is that, you know, if you vote to punish Democrats for the genocide, you're A, not only risking bringing in Trump, who could possibly be worse. It's hard to imagine, but it's possible. Like, Trump could endorse an even more aggressive Israeli assault on the West Bank, for example, than Biden's already done. But again, Biden's already endorsed a really aggressive assault on the West Bank. In fact,
I mean, yeah, I know you know this. I know you're trying to do a counter argument, but yeah. I categorically, and we all reject the idea that it could be worse. Gaza is flattened. You know, babies have been headless for 3 months. Bulldozers have run over bodies. What is worse? Worse, like if somebody says, well, Trump will flatten Gaza, somebody actually needs to flatten it. If it ever needs to be rebuilt for whomever, it needs to be flattened. Like, this is not a threat. There's no worse. And also, when in history did we ever say, like, oh, there could be a worse genocide? Genocide is genocide. You know, you don't say, well, this guy could be slightly worse. Like, no, it's either genocide or not. And again, it goes back to, it doesn't even matter if it's the Democrats or the Republicans right now. It's the point that whoever is committing genocide cannot be rewarded, because it's not about the actual party. It's about the act of us as a nation deciding you committed genocide, but we'll vote for you anyway. Massive mistake. I mean, you know, this is what I really would like people to understand. This is a massive mistake, not just for Palestinians, because again, when you talk to Palestinians, especially on the ground, they don't give a shit. They hate Americans. They hate the entire West, other than Ireland and Spain, maybe. But they think everybody is, you know, even those are just performative, really. They do not give a shit about our election. For them, it is what it is. Nobody's making it any better. And I think there's part of in the really academic intellectual circles in Palestine where they feel, you know, let them continue to behave like that, because eventually they will all turn on themselves. As you know, this kind of stuff, as we should have learned from the Germans, eventually you find yourself in ashes, you know. And so that threat of it could be worse, I don't, not for the Palestinians, maybe for Americans, you know, maybe he will put another two crazy people on the Supreme Court. That I can see.
Well, that's the argument, right? That's the argument, that you're not just punishing, if you vote, you know, if you don't vote for Democrats, you aren't just punishing Democrats, but you're punishing the most marginalized people in the U.S. who will suffer more likely under Trump than they would under Democrats, because I think it is, I mean, people might disagree with this, but generally Democrats have slightly better policies, or better policies for the most marginalized people, than Republicans do, who just serve the ultra rich to the extreme, whereas Democrats serve the ultra rich to a lesser extreme. That's the argument there, is it privileged people who vote against Kamala Harris aren't just punishing the Democrats, they're also punishing people who actually suffer the policies much more harshly, people like Trump.
Yeah. If you really look, though, you don't see a lot of, like, you know, it doesn't matter what group you look at, whether it's Latinos or Black Americans, you find within that group people who will vote for Harris, but you actually, the ones who are loudest saying absolutely not, are really the most marginalized, you know. I haven't seen a disabled person who's willing to vote for Harris. Like, I think they get it the most, you know, and so the trans community, there's a proportion who thinks Harris will, you know, do better for them. But the largest part is very clear, like, oh, shit, if that happens to them, this could happen to us. Again, because with somebody committing genocide, you don't know who they turn on next. And you also, again, I think people are seeing it too much as a party thing, whereas I see it as an overall issue, you know. you know, I think these parties are very similar. Obviously, everybody in the world kind of thinks that. And I think that's where Americans get really stuck on, you know, I once made a movie about, you know, hooligan firms in the UK. And, you know, the way people behave about the GOP and the Democrats very much reminds me of these, you know, the kind of firms that would never, no matter how much you could pay them millions, and they wouldn't switch firms or teams, you know. And so it strikes me as, you know, very culty, very unreasonable, because if you look at them from the outside, as I do, I vote here, but I also grew up in Europe and I'm Palestinian. So I look at it from the outside and I think this is, for the fact that they're not very different, you know, even in its MAGA version, that the kind of hatred they have, you know, where they really just want to fucking go at each other's throat is super irrational. Because, you know, to the rest of the world, you're still one of the, I think, the third richest nation who still doesn't have free colleges and free healthcare and everything else everybody has. Like, everybody in the world always looks at you guys and think, the fuck are they doing, you know? So there's a lot of, like, they do this and they do this. To the rest of the world, it looks very much the same. And I also have to tell you, when you saw these Michigan Muslims, there's a lot of, like, rumors about why they supported Trump. But I can tell you that, you know, I'm, you know, there's a big part of my family I argue with about, because I'm a loud feminist, which in Palestinian culture, sometimes you're not that's not the most welcome. Like, you have to, I mean, in every culture, it's not the most welcome in German or in American either. But what I'm saying is that I don't ever hide what I feel about a feminism or gay rights. I am that out there, and I will fight everybody in my family. It doesn't matter where they culturally are. And so when I hear this talk about, oh, these Muslims got behind Trump because they hate gays or something, no, this is not true. Like, I can tell you that even the gay members in my Palestinian family, you know, we're making this calculation. And on this calculation, what we have seen is behavior from the Democrats that is psychopathic. And like, the way Biden behaved was definitely, you know, when he was shown pictures and said, oh, I already saw these same pictures. Right. And the woman said, no, he hasn't. These are brand new pictures. Like, that is psychotic white supremacist behavior out in the open. Now, we could say he had a very specific hatred for Palestinians that goes back to his buddy who was KKK. And there's a whole history about him about that. I understand that. But I then have, you know, listened and watched to Harris. My hope was actually, given that she has a stepdaughter who's out there fundraising for Palestine, maybe there is hope. Because believe it or not, you know, I remember when Ivanka Trump made her father do something about the Syrian kids who were attacked with a chemical attack. And I thought, this is actually how dumb it would be. It would be a relative who pushes the idiot in charge in this country to make it stop. And there was hope that I thought, maybe. But she has increasingly, like, if she had thrown a shoe at every Arab in this country, it would have been the same. I'm not understanding the strategy. Like, you could have at least pretended. You could have at least pretended. They didn't even make an attempt. Kicked out a Palestinian, constantly refused any engagement that even the Palestinians, Arab Americans asked for. You know, sent Richie Torres to Michigan. I mean, the list goes on and on.
And they just sent Bill Clinton. They just sent Bill Clinton to Michigan, where he basically called all Palestinians human shields. He justified Israel's mass murder, said, like, what would you do if you're Israeli? Because some Israelis who were attacked on October 7th wanted peace, so therefore it's okay to commit genocide. Yeah. And then he said that Jews were in Palestine before Muslims, which is, like, you know, completely ahistorical. Yeah.
I mean, that was so bizarre, you know, but yeah.
Like,
it was
all
just
the talking points, all the Hasbara talking points in one speech.
In one speech. And it was kind of like we were all watching this, and it was almost like the tipping of the iceberg. Like, we've seen it from everybody. I mean, she gets heckled. And every time she opens her mouth, she gets heckled, right? She only has one light. I'm speaking. She tries it every time. But this last time, what did she say about Gaza? I am helping Gaza, and we get those hostages out. It is like handless, you know, speech. there is part of that. And, you know, in our, I can only tell you what happens in like Palestinian chat rooms as an example of like what, and you know, usually I would say probably all of us have different chat rooms with families. Sure. And in a Palestinian family, you will usually find, you know, multiple people, generations and multiple professions. So I always find them a good, like, the pulse of something, right? Now, again, though, mine is all diaspora, so it's not, we're not on the ground, and they will feel differently. But in our family chat, it is, you know, everybody kind of feels there is at this point, and this is a very rational, we understand who Trump is. We understand he uses Palestinians as a insult, right? We understand he moved the embassy. You don't ever have to tell Palestinians that we have paying attention. But we are all convinced, it doesn't matter who it is, we are all convinced that chances are he will stop the genocide sooner than the Democrats. Yeah. And you can tell, by the way, by the Israelis who are having that same concern. I've already seen the articles written about it. I've seen the interviews about it. I have a friend, a very lefty friend, I think one of the three lefties left in Israel, who, you know, who says you can actually tell in Hebrew TV that there is that feeling. And I also feel like there's
a lot of... Well, that's interesting. I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's interesting because, you know, people, the conventional belief here is that it actually that Netanyahu wants Trump because he feels that Trump would allow him to go even more ballistic against Palestinians. That's wild. And there is, you know, Netanyahu and Trump are close, and Netanyahu is close to Trump's biggest donors. So I do think there is some evidence for that. I'm surprised.
I don't think that is true, because they've already argued, you know, the first thing Trump did in his first interview, you can actually see him always get corrected. And we are worried about that, because he will go on his first interview, which made big, big news, because he said, you know, everybody started saying that he said, they have to finish them. They have to finish them. Yeah. That is not what he said. He said they have to finish it. This is very bad PR. The images coming out is horrible. I don't know why these images are being released. They must get back to peace. The killing must stop. He said that twice. This upset Israelis very much, and this upset American Zionists. This is like the 10th time that he has said something actually anti-Zionist. Because, you know, let's be honest, that man is actually deep down inside, he is not pro-Jewish or pro-Zionism. He truly isn't. If you remember in the very beginning of his first campaign, he was booed in every Jewish organization, convention and event. And then I remember this so clearly because, you know, I was always obsessed with his hairstylist. Who is Palestinian, you know, and he's more than a hairstylist, and he probably hates the fact because he hates the fact to be known as that, because he makes always sure that people know he doesn't actually do Trump's hair. But they, you know, he invented, he's one of those really successful Palestinians who came to America and then invented some kind of hair color that without the bad chemical in it. He's a billionaire now, right? But he was also on The Apprentice, and Trump brought him on The Apprentice because he's a billionaire hairstylist who invented color, blah, blah. So from the beginning, this man said, no, I think Trump will be good for Palestine. Now, this man doesn't say that because he's a fucking idiot. There is some proof for that. But what we have also seen, that Trump is an absolute whore. You know, like, whoever pulls him back from that, he will go out and say something anti-Zionism, anti-Semitism, true also, right? He will say that, and then he gets pulled back. And I remember so clearly during his first campaign how he spent a weekend with Adelson. And he was, that after that weekend he was in. He was the most pro-Zionist. And unfortunately, when that idiot embraces something, he will embrace it fully, you know? And that's when, you know, embassies were moved and...
Yeah.
Right. Stuff. So I agree with you there. But the other part to that is that I do truly believe he can't stand these images. He said it more than enough. And he said it the first time. I remember when he fired Bolton, because Bolton said this guy always, and I 100% believe that Bolton kept wanting to have a war.
Didn't he say like he never met a war he didn't like or something?
He said that he kept pushing for war, and it's true, Bolton wanted war against Iran. you know, and let's be honest, I mean, this is not a conspiracy. There is a thing about the U.S., and probably it is in many countries, but it is very, you know, extreme in the U.S., where a certain group of people make a lot of money when the U.S. goes to war. That's just the thing, you know, and I don't think that will ever stop. War must be for a certain industry and a certain amount of people to make money. And we find ourselves here, and that Bolton guy just reminded me of a Dick Cheney, like pushing for war. And Trump fired him. There's been multiple articles about that. And I think it was even written in somebody's biography that, you know, look, he hated that. And this is not an honorable and anti-war thing. I want to make that clear. Right. Trump is not honorable anti-war the way the three of us are anti-war, right? He doesn't like it. He doesn't like people in uniform. He doesn't get the fucking parades. That's why he keeps having these bloopers where he says shit that insults the U.S. military. But he's not a military kind of guy. His father fucking or grandfather ran a whorehouse. That's what this family are. They are not military people. But that also means he doesn't get this kind of... He will put in, you know... See, my reason for not voting for him is much more like the fact that he put an ad in the paper to get these young black men killed that were innocent. That, to me, is like, stand the fuck up. I don't think that, you know... For his foreign policy is not hawkish because he doesn't give a fuck. And he's also essentially, in his essence, a real America first guy. He would like to take this money and put it here. He would also like it if he could only put it for white Americans. And rich, I don't right. argue that.
Yeah.
But he's not, I truly think he can't he doesn't like war. Certainly not if he has to see it. And I tell you another thing. If he had been heckled the way she had been heckled, it would have stopped already. He can't stand it. He's too vain and too narcissistic for that. Mm. And the psychotic part of the Democrats, to me, this is what shocks me the most. And I'm not scared of a lot of things, but to me, this felt very much like we're dealing with zombies. How do you get heckled and shown images and just, you know, these guys get these... You know, this one woman who just went on the news, who resigned, the latest one who resigned, who said, you know, I'm the one who had to put the report together and show the images and show to Biden what images are coming out of the Middle East that are basically now shaping the opinion of the Middle East, of the U.S., and he just disregarded it. She was asked not to put those reports together and to... I find that everything I learned about Nazis, I find that behavior much more Nazi-like than anything Trump does with his dumb shit that he says. You know, Trump is a vulgar, you know...
Opportunist.
Kind of three-penny racist. You know, he says dumb racist stuff that, like, people at the fucking pub say, you know? Whereas the idea that this group of people, Blinken and Biden... have had these their own employees come to them over and over, resigning a fucking... We had an arms dealer resign. When have you ever heard
that? Josh
when
Paul,
have
right.
you heard that? You know, all these people saying this is too much. And I've actually made a folder with a collection of everybody who resigned and everybody who wrote written open letters. There was... People forget because so much has happened, but there was a group of NatCom Democrats, like hawkish Democrats that have gotten together and written a letter and said the Gaza policy must change. Forgotten, ignored. Yeah. So to me, that behavior is strange, and it's now continuing with Harris. You know, Harris could have made a choice and pretended, you know. She could have at least
lied.
You know,
that's the thing. And she could have distanced herself from Joe Biden because Joe Biden was already replaced. Like, they already were saying that Joe Biden was unfit to run.
Right.
So therefore, he's done anyway. So they could have broken from him and actually blamed him for the Gaza genocide. Said, like, this wasn't me. Instead, Kamala Harris was very clear that there's no difference between her and Biden on this issue, and she wouldn't do anything differently. And what I find really unfortunate is people like Bernie Sanders and AOC. They could have used their platforms because obviously, like, they want Kamala Harris to win, and fine, that's their right. They could have used their platforms to pressure Kamala Harris to break from Biden. Mm. Instead, they made excuses for Kamala Harris not doing that. AOC got up on stage at the DNC and lied and said that Kamala Harris is working tirelessly. For a ceasefire. So they papered over Kamala Harris's refusal to break from Biden, and they could have used the platform they have to pressure actually to do the right thing. And it very well could cost them. We have to wrap soon. I want to ask you, Lexi, you work in film, and I'm just wondering for you what that experience has been like, you know, and how you've been evaluating that industry, which is so beholden to Zionist interests ever since October 7th.
Yeah, it's not great. It's very bad here. I basically quit and I'm moving to Ireland in 2 months. It's not sustainable. I'm too loud for it, you know. And I also see, though, I'm obviously very outspoken, but there's a few Palestinians in the industry who have been quiet, which to me is worse, to be honest. You know, like how it's not like people don't know you're Palestinian, so they're looking at you and you're quiet. So it's not like they judge you differently. They still won't trust you. You're not even saying anything. So now you're suffering at home. Like, I don't see them getting work or rewarded because they're quiet. So I figured I may as well. I mean, there's no way I could have been any different anyway. So, but it is a stronghold in Zionism. I would say tech is probably, it's kind of the same with tech and Hollywood have a really strong Zionism, you know, the kind of the power, you know, the WhatsApp groups, the, you know, this is why you have, we are a strong union town, you know, we are striking union people, we have below the line Teamsters, and you see the entire nation's union from the post union to the, I don't know, all the unions have come out for ceasefire, not our unions, you know. And we have certainly tried. In each union, there is a group that has pushed for that. We have been shut down. So, you know, I think that, you know, something is going to break there too, because it's not sustainable the way it's going. You basically, you know, it's very hard to talk about, because when you talk about this, it's hard to, especially for me, to circumvent the tropes, you know, about who is in power, you know, because, you know, I don't ever, you
know. It's a safe space. We know you're not an anti-Semite. Well,
no, but, you know, for me myself, you know, this is a thing. Again, I grew up in Germany and I am a huge opponent of anti-Semitism, and I also don't like these tropes. I've never felt Jews run the industry, you know. I was recruited and pushed to go on the street to protest for Palestine, not by my family, but by, you know, leftist Jews that I met in Hollywood. They said, what the fuck are you doing, Lexi? Aren't you going? So I felt always very, but then there's this other side that really came out during the Sony hack. By the way, if we're wrapping, you know, is this the end of your podcast already?
Yes, we are coming to the end. Yes. Yeah,
but we'll have you on again. This is just,
I want to mention something about, about these fundraisers that are going on. It's very important. I have to get this message out, and you guys are the first people I'm doing a podcast with, right? So everybody is a little bit stunned about these fundraisers that you see all these Palestinians on begging. And if you know anything about Arab culture or Palestinian culture, it's the worst thing. Like, you know, even when I go home, when I go visit, whether, you know, it is Jordan or the last time I was in Al-Ghalil, you know, they want to pay for me. They don't want, even though they know I make more money, you know. So the culture, everybody knows our culture is very much, you know, they want to give, they don't want to take. So
extremely for generous us even, and
it has been very weird to see people beg and beg aggressively. So I have done some investigations into this, because what has bothered me is, given that I also have family all over the world, where the kids tell me, we did a swap meet for, you know, Palestine, and we did, our entire football club is collecting all year. So I keep hearing this. Restaurants in Europe, all the Indian restaurants, Muslim Indian restaurants, have now an option on the bill that you can. I'm like, where's this money going? Because for 12 months, big organizations have made billions, and it's really billions, you know, they have collected. And I'm not saying that they are dodgy, but there's been so much money coming in because people have been given because of the images. That money is not getting through. We all kind of understand why, right? I mean, there's a certain process that has to be followed, and obviously that process has not been allowed. So there's no money directly going that usually after big bombing goes, okay, that goes to them to rebuild, to, you know, to kind of get the thing up. So what we have seen in the past when a bombing has happened, the money comes in and Gaza rebuilds, has not happened. The economy is destroyed. Nobody has a job anymore. Nobody goes to work anymore at all. There's no money coming in, and there's also no aid coming in. The aid that does come in, and this is now what I've just learned a couple of days ago, is that Israel has hired, I'm not clear on who it is, I think they're actually Palestinian, right? But they have hired a group to basically guard the aid trucks. And unfortunately, what has happened, very few aid trucks come in, and then the people who are in charge of guarding the aid trucks actually sell the food. So that's why Palestinians suddenly need 40 shekel for a bag of flowers. So now that I've dug into this a little bit more, because again, it was odd. It was so fucking odd that, you know, you have a people who hate begging suddenly over and over and over again, and it won't stop. And I'm like, this is not even they can't even bribe Egypt anymore to get out. So it's not even about that anymore. So I was really curious, what is actually going on? Because if you send somebody $100, normally if you send somebody in Lebanon during their crisis, you know, if you send them, it usually lasts a few months, but this has never lasted. So now I've understood what is going on. You know, it basically costs them three times as much to survive than usual, because there is this, what they describe as mafia. And again, they can only say limited stuff because they know everybody has access to this conversation, but they are paying for the aid that comes in. They have to pay for every piece of food they get, and they pay high money, and they have to beg for survival. And so I think I want people to be aware of it. I am not a non-profit organizer, so I have no idea what to actually do. I know these big organizations like Doctors Without Borders and, you know, every organization we know that usually they're all sitting on a lot of money. And I'm not saying that they're purposely holding it, but there's a huge disconnect of money that has been given, you know, from people who feel bad, who really want to help. They can't get the money through. Aid is not coming through. This mini mafia is selling the little aid that comes through. And we have people begging. And the odd part about this is that us giving money to some fundraiser in the UK or Germany and them sending it directly to somebody in Palestine is actually working. That's actually how they survive. So the majority of Palestinians in Gaza are actually surviving because of people on Twitter or TikTok. So I need to start putting that out there because...
Okay, we got it. Yeah,
we all broke, and there's not much you can get out of the people who are speaking out for Palestine because we don't never get work.
Right.
And also, if there is somebody listening who actually knows how to get around this, hopefully somebody can start figuring it out.
So who are you, if you don't mind sharing, who are you voting for?
I'm voting for Jill Stein.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I'm in New York. There's nothing to me.
Yeah,
there's
same no in California.
I don't get how, yeah.
I think that the gesture is, again, I think people need to really understand that rather than thinking about the names right now and the situation right now, think about the fact that you're voting for somebody you've watched commit suicide, you know? And yes, Trump, if Trump will be worse, Trump will be worse, and then we'll endure it together. And we'll fight that fucker too, but you still can't reward genocide.
Lexi Alexander, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. It's great to have you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Bye.
That was really fascinating.
Thanks to Lexi for joining us. I want to make one, not a correction, but one clarification. I didn't want to get into a debate with Lexi about allegations of Syrian chemical weapons attacks.
Oh, yeah.
But just the key thing to say about these allegations of chemical attacks by Syria, that they're allegations. And, you know, obviously, for people who follow me, you know, I've done a lot of reporting that calls into question The Trump administration's claim that Syria committed one chemical attack, the one in Douma in April 2018. And I would say that there are similar questions about the allegation that the Trump administration also lodged the previous year in April 2017. So these are alleged chemical attacks, and there are reasons, I think, to dispute them. But I didn't want to get into a debate about chemical attacks in Syria during a discussion about a really important issue right now, which is, you know, an election during a genocide.
Okay, and up next we have Rania Batrice. And Rania Batrice is a first-generation Palestinian-American political strategist, activist, and communications expert. She is also the non-resident Palestinian fellow at Foundation for the Middle East. And as you'll see, she is extremely disappointed by the Democrats. She's very angry that people are being put into the position of choosing between Harris and Trump. Basically between two people who have not vowed at all to stop the genocide, have not committed to an arms embargo, or even just respecting international humanitarian law. But as you'll see, she thinks that Trump would be worse than Harris.
And I was not present for this interview, so this is a conversation between Katie and Rania. I was not there, not for ideological reasons, just simply because of scheduling reasons. I could not make it. So here is a conversation between Katie and Rania.
Thank you so much for joining, Rania.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us your thoughts on the election. I know that you are very outspoken, and I really appreciate how outspoken you've been on issues around Palestine. And as you know, a lot of progressives, a lot of people who care about Palestine feel very conflicted about this election. What is your view on what should be done in terms of voting?
Yeah, I want to first just say, this is a horrible situation that we've been put into. There's no easy, good answer that I feel really good about saying, and which is, I mean, anybody who knows me knows I have very strong opinions about things. this is a cycle unlike any other. It's not that, I mean, in 2020, I often joke that Joe Biden was not my 10th choice in 2020, but it felt easier to even galvanize around him after a Donald Trump presidency. Obviously, we've seen how atrocious he and everyone around him has been. So we're in a shit position. I hope I can say that. And the reality is we are going to either have Donald Trump in the White House or Kamala Harris in the White House. This is what's going to happen. I hate it. I wish we weren't in this position, but we are. And you're right. I have been outspoken. I'm a first generation Palestinian American. I've spent my entire life fighting for justice and equity and collective liberation. I wake up every day and I'm Palestinian. That doesn't go anywhere. I've been gutted by everything that we've all been seeing, and also, you know, waiting to hear from my family and waiting to hear from friends and colleagues and not knowing. I mean, it's that WhatsApp message, waiting for that second check mark to pop up. It seems like such a ridiculous thing, but you just don't know from one minute to the next.
Just so, for people who don't know, that means that they've read it or they've seen it, right? That second check mark?
That it's been sent. It doesn't necessarily mean that they've read it. Yes. Yeah. So obviously waiting for the response. Yeah. Waiting for the response is a whole nother thing. But like, if it doesn't even go through, is it because internet has been cut off again? Is it because they're gone? Is it, there's a million and one different scenarios, and there's nothing easy about this. But the thing that the place I've come to, and I've been fighting this fight for over a year now, but for my whole life. This is not, everybody who's been paying attention understands, as much as some people want to say this started on October 7th, it didn't. You know, this is a lifelong fight. I don't think we get to continue this fight and continue fighting for humanity, for Palestinian people, and many, many other communities under a Donald Trump presidency. And so this is where I've landed. It's not, again, it's not easy. I don't like it. I wish we were in a different position. But I do believe that with a President Kamala Harris, we have a fight to fight. We know, for me personally, like, I know who to call. I don't know who to call in the Donald Trump admin, and I don't think they would give a crap anyway. You know, I mean, just the realities. And I've heard people say things like, we survived Donald Trump for 4 years already, we'll survive again. And the thing I always have to remind people is, we survived a Trump presidency, sort of. Like, we can't pretend like the Supreme Court isn't what it is. We can't pretend like lower courts are not what they are. And the other thing is, the other just the painful reality is, there were people within that Trump, that first Trump admin, that were willing to defect and do the right thing. Those people do not exist anymore. He is surrounded by sycophants who helped write Project 2025, who are hell-bent on implementing it, who don't care about us. They don't care about us. If you are not a wealthy white person, you are not somebody that they are going to care about. And again, this is not a, oh, Kamala Harris has shown up for us. She hasn't. This is not, she has not done enough for us. The Democratic Party has not done enough for us. But I feel like there is a fight to be fought under a Harris presidency. And again, just, it just isn't there with Trump.
So what does that mean, a fight to be fought under a Harris presidency? What is that thing that's there with her to do and not there with Trump?
So I think we can actually, I do think that she has shown some willingness to listen. We have, and I often have to even remind myself, you know, what she said about Netanyahu in Dubai, first person to call for ceasefire, you know, well before she was ever at the top of the ticket. She was, frankly, the first person within this administration to use any sort of humanizing language about Palestinian people. And I do know also, she is the only person in this administration who called Americans from Gaza who lost family to, you know, to give her condolences and to show that she cares. She's literally the only person who did that. Now, is any of that enough? No, but it is a proof point that we can push her. We can have conversations with her. We can put the facts in front of her. We can put humanity in front of her. And I think there's much more of a willingness to listen and absorb and internalize and do something about it than Donald Trump would ever be willing to do.
What are your feelings about the increased support among Palestinian Americans and Arab Americans for Jill Stein and for Trump? I mean, those numbers have been going up for Trump as well. Where do you think that comes from, and what do you say to those people?
Yeah, it's a deep, deep pain and trauma, and frankly, I understand. I do. I feel that pain and I feel that trauma every single day. I'm not sleeping either. I'm not eating. You know, I feel it deeply, just like so many people in my community are, in my community, in the Lebanese community, and our allies, frankly, too. And I get it. I really do. I don't agree with it. You know, the some of the things with Trump, I mean, there's two sides of that coin. One with Trump is it's an older part of our community that is wildly conservative, that some of them are very wealthy. They're all about the tax breaks, and they are supporting Donald Trump because of those things. I've got nothing to say there. I mean, I'm never going to agree with that. I'm never going to, you know, there's just nowhere to go there.
There is also, I mean, there's no empathy. There's no empathy. Like, I have not to be like, those are not our allies. Those are not people who, like, what are you doing? Why, you know, you can't, I don't think it makes sense for their interests. That makes sense. I mean, I think it's terrible. Yeah. It's selfish.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's homophobic. Yeah, it's rooted in racism and homophobia and xenophobia and their own xenophobia. It's, you know, nothing to say there. The other
maybe like, even if they don't embrace those things, they're willing to tolerate them for their own financial self-interest, which you could argue is a form of that, right?
Yeah. But the other side of it is, and I've heard this a lot, and it is, again, I think it's rooted in a deep pain and trauma. There is this belief that Democrats would rally against Donald Trump.
Yes.
If Donald Trump were in office during this horrible genocide and now the ethnic cleansing happening in Lebanon, that Democrats would rally around against him, sorry, would rally against him. I understand deeply that the desire to sort of believe that, but the reality is the progressive but for Palestine is not just a slogan. It's real. And taking that gamble of like, oh, Democrats, I mean, we have proof points from when he was in office where they didn't rally against him, you know, when he, so I just don't, I think it is, it's a flawed way of thinking. Again, I understand where it comes from. I don't think it's correct. I don't think it's, I was just having a conversation recently with somebody about how, for me, and I know for a lot of people, strategy and morality intersect, you know, like what my strategic thinking is tied into my moral compass. And it's not just me, obviously, lots of people feel that way. I don't think that's a strategic or a moral move. On the Jill Stein front, I've already gotten myself into trouble. I kept quiet for a very long time about Jill Stein. I'm just going to say it. I don't like her. I haven't for years, not just this cycle, for years. I've seen some very problematic things from her where she has, this is a firsthand experience, not something that was relayed to me, where she tried to center herself among Arab and Palestinian voices. And when she was told no, it was not pretty. I think it's telling that every Palestinian person she asked to be her VP pick said no. I think it's telling that she has never spoken about Palestine until it was convenient and politically expedient for her. I believe she will sell us up the river the moment we become inconvenient for her. I know some people think that this is not a big deal. I have a deep, deep issue with somebody running for president who doesn't know how the government works. That's so problematic to me. And then the other thing too is like the flat out lies that she and her running mate have told about this Muhammad Ali moment, like there's some chance they're going to win, when we all know, you know, we all know that it is mathematically impossible. It is not possible. And so to me, she is taking advantage of and preying on our community's grief and trauma in a really, frankly, disgusting way. And I can't get behind it. Like I said, I stayed quiet for a really long time, and I just couldn't, I can't anymore. It's too dangerous. What they're doing is dangerous. The way, again, they're preying on our grief is dangerous. And I'm never going to be okay with that. I do understand why my community feels seen and heard. She's saying all the right, she's running around the country with a keffiyeh. I get it. I absolutely understand. My issue is with her, you know, not with the people who are being preyed on, quite frankly.
I mean, I know, just to push back a little bit, I do know that, and it's understandable, she's not been that high of profile. I think she did start speaking out on this issue in 2012, but I think she has spoken out on this before this round.
I guess I haven't seen, I don't know how did she speak it? I have never heard it before from her. And I've, again, been around her for years now.
What can you tell us more about what you were just talking about? You were referring to something about how it wasn't pretty and this wasn't secondhand information. So it's like something you witnessed, to the extent that you're comfortable. Can you share what that anecdote is?
Yeah, I really don't. I don't want to share too much, but she, you know, it was an event with, you know, room full of Arabs and Palestinians. It was shortly after the invasion started. Her team asked for her to speak. They were told no. She made a big issue out of it. It was just really unfortunate and upsetting. I mean, it was a room full of grieving people. And it wasn't, you know, we didn't want to hear from anyone running for any office, quite frankly. It didn't matter. It was, I mean, and to tell you the truth, there were other members, office holders that were in the room who were there to support, and that's it. And that is, that to me is, that was the appropriate thing to do. So anyway, yeah, I really don't want to go too far into it, sure, because yeah, I don't want, you know, divulging too much actually pulls other people in who may not want to be pulled in. So sure. Yeah.
Any final words from you, Rania? Any predictions?
I truly don't know what's going to happen, which is also really devastating that we are in this position where it's like Donald Trump is a 35-time convicted felon and truly a threat to humanity, and it's this close. It's really quite unbelievable, but I feel like self-inflicted. And so my final words are just, none of this is ideal. None of this is great, but can we, you know, get through this together and then really join forces and demand collective liberation for everyone, including the Palestinian people.
Great. Thank you so much, Rania.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it. Two very different opinions from two people who I think, you know, actually agree on a lot of things and definitely agree that what's happening in Palestine is an atrocious, unforgivable genocide, and that it is a stain on every politician who has been complicit in it. And then the only question is for them, what should be done about it on the electoral front?
And I'll just say that I understand whatever choice anyone makes. I think you can make a really strong argument in both directions. I totally get the need to punish Democrats for the genocide. I also get the fear of something much worse. I do. And not just on Palestine, but on other issues too. And I do think anybody who is going to make the case Democrats have to be punished, fair enough, if that's how you feel. But I do think it's important to be clear-eyed that on domestic issues, and this is just my opinion, I know people will disagree, Democrats are better. They just are. Republicans are more subservient to the ultra elite than Democrats are. Not that that makes Democrats any good or anything worth salvaging, but I do think, you know, I subscribe to the Chomsky view that the smallest differences between the world's most powerful people can make a big difference for the world's most vulnerable.
Ripple effects. Yeah.
Major I do. Effects.
Yeah.
I do. It's not privileged people like us who will be suffering the consequences of a Republican presidency. And it's not just about, you know, who's in the Oval Office, but also who's in Congress. And that's just something to be honest about. I think if you're going to make the case for punishing the Democrats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, I've been very critical of the Dems for like not codifying Roe. But I also think that Trump has made extremely dangerous decisions that have real life and death ramifications on women. Also, there's the immigration question. Again, it's so awful because the Democrats are moving towards Trump because they stand for nothing, and they can barely pull off the lesser evil argument, honestly. But to me, I have to say, I've never really been convinced by the argument that it can't get any worse or that this is the worst case scenario, because unfortunately, I can see it getting worse under either of them, under both of them. I actually find the most kind of compelling argument potentially that there is, and I know a lot of people disagree with me on this, I think that, I don't know how likely it is, but I could see Trump, because he's so unpredictable, I could see him doing certain things that Harris won't do. I could see either one being worse than the other, basically. But I think it's important to air all the issues. And I'm really glad to hear these two voices who represent these two viewpoints on it. But again, it's a no-brainer for me. I'm voting for Jill Stein. Some people are saying, you have to don't even do that, even if you like her in a safe state, because Harris needs to win the popular vote overwhelmingly, so Trump doesn't contest it. Trump's going to contest it anyway. So I say, vote your conscience if you can. It's up to you, honestly. Obviously, I'm just giving my own take on it.
Really, it's up to the Useful Idiots audience who they're going to vote for, not up to us.
I mean, as much as I'd like it to be up to us.
Yeah.
And if we lived in a fairer world, the world that you and I are fighting for, Aaron, is a world in which I am the philosopher queen and you are the philosopher king. But sadly, yes, we don't have that yet.
Yes. No. Well, here's what we can all agree on. We will all welcome, I think, the opportunity to no longer talk about this choice.
Yes.
Horrible choice between Trump and Harris, because the election is just days away. And then we can all move on with our lives into the next phase of Armageddon. And we're very happy to do it with you, our audience at Useful Idiots. Thanks for being here and supporting us. Our website is usefulidiotspodcast.com. Go there to support the show and get bonus content.
One final thing I want to say. If Trump wins, people are going to blame the Greens and the Palestinians, and they're wrong to do that. This is because of the Dems. If the Dems lose, it's on them.
We'll see you next time.
Thanks so much for listening to and watching Useful Idiots. For extended episodes, bonus content, and our weekly Thursday Throwdown episode, please subscribe at usefulidiotspodcast.com. Support the show for free by subscribing on YouTube, Rumble, and wherever you get your podcasts. If you like the podcast, don't forget to rate and review. You can also follow us on Twitter at Useful Idiot Pod. Thanks for supporting independent media. We'll see you next time.